From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. President Biden announced yesterday there will be enough vaccines for every American adult by the end of May. That's 2 months earlier than previously projected. The sped-up timeline is in part on account of the recent emergency use authorization. Emergency use authorization. I'm going to get that right. Granted for the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. A rival drug company, Merck, is going to help manufacture more doses. Now, there are three vaccines against COVID-19 approved in the U.S. It's easier to dream of life returning back to normal. But the pandemic is still very much a reality. The Illinois Department of Public Health reported 47 new deaths and 1,577 new and probable cases of COVID-19 yesterday. And hospitals, especially rural hospitals, still face challenges despite the ramped-up vaccine supply. Here to talk more about this is Lauren Weber, Midwest correspondent for Kaiser Health News. Lauren, welcome back to The 21st.
Thanks for having me again.
I'd also like to welcome back Dr. Vithya Sundaresan, a professor and interim chief of infectious diseases at the SIU School of Medicine. She's also medical advisor to the Sangamon County Department of Public Health in Springfield. Dr. Sundaresan, welcome back to The 21st to you as well.
Thank you for having me.
Listeners, if you want to join our conversation, you can do so at 800-222-9455. Do you have questions about the new Johnson & Johnson vaccine? Just anecdotally, it seems to me a lot more people are able to get vaccines. If you want to share your experience of that, what it's been like, the wait, 800-222-9455 is the number. Again, 800-222-9455. Lauren, I'm going to begin with you. You published a story last month about how, despite the vaccine being rolled out, rural hospitals are still at, quote, war. What are some of the challenges rural hospitals in particular are still facing?
Yeah, no, I mean, I want to point out first, too, it was last month, so case numbers have certainly gotten better since then. But I think rural hospitals, what a lot of people don't realize is that rural mortality has been significantly higher in this country since the summer. And rural hospitals often are left on the front lines to kind of deal with a population that is typically older, sicker, and poorer. And frankly, half of them in this country are not set up with an ICU. So you're dealing with services that are not fully equipped to handle the extreme levels of care that COVID can sometimes require. And what I found in this hospital, rural hospital in Louisiana, is that a lot of the staff had been forced to ration care. They had also been forced to call around as a lot of the surrounding ICUs had been slammed. Now, as I said, case counts have gotten significantly better since then. So hopefully this has subsided a bit. But one thing that really stuck with me is that the burnout seemed to have really hit quite the turning point. And I think some of that is that rural hospital workers and healthcare workers across the country can see the light at the end of the tunnel and also are kind of starting to grapple with, alongside that, what the sacrifices over the past year have meant for them and for their mental health.
Dr. Sundaresan, you're based in Springfield, which is a regional medical center. It not only addresses the population of Springfield and Sangamon County and surrounding communities, but really many counties in the area. What is your perspective on what's been happening with COVID lately?
No, we're actually seeing that the numbers have drastically dropped very much in keeping with what's happening nationally and in Illinois. There are a few upticks, a couple of times that you see the numbers go up, but then the trend has been going down. So that's good news. And what happens in the hospitals pretty much mirrors what we see in the community and what's reported in the community too. The availability of ICUs, like Lauren was mentioning, ICU beds and ventilators has always been an issue. And the way it's calculated too, you want to be able to have enough ventilators free anticipating admissions and anticipating the need for them as people get admitted with severe disease. Those numbers are being very closely tracked, and we're doing fairly well with respect to that number as well as of now.
Yeah, Dr. Sundaresan, I've got to say, I'm surprised, given how restaurants were reopening for indoor dining, in some cases ahead of statewide public health guidelines, like in Springfield. I was pretty pessimistic and braced for another wave of infections, but we really haven't seen that. In fact, yesterday, the statewide 7-day average test positivity rate was 2.4%. That ties for the previous low from last June. What do you make of that?
Yeah, actually, I agree with you. We had restaurants and bars as one of the highest exposure by location when we were tracking it earlier in November. So when they were ready to reopen, we were cautiously watching those numbers. And, I have to say they've done a really good job in terms of following all the guidance. And so I must say kudos to the restaurant and bar industry that we're still seeing those numbers go down despite the reopening.
Lauren, what are you hearing from healthcare workers? You mentioned some of them are grappling with the sort of toll that the past year has taken on their lives. But now that vaccines are becoming more widely available, where are they at?
I mean, I think it's a combination, right? I mean, you have, there's been much written about how there's just tremendous joy among healthcare workers for the opportunity to get vaccine. You know, they can then go home to their families and feel less likely that they're going to spread COVID to them. I just some security in knowing that alone. But like I said, I do think with this light at the end of the tunnel, you also then are forced to evaluate what this past year has meant and what it has been for you. And I do think healthcare workers in general are going to grapple with the effects of that for many years to come.
All right, I want to reintroduce my guests here. If you're just tuning in, this is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about the latest with COVID-19 in Illinois, which is wider vaccine availability, theoretically at least, with the Johnson & Johnson vaccine approval, as well as declining case numbers. I'm speaking with Lauren Weber, Midwest correspondent for Kaiser Health News, and Dr. Vithya Sundaresan, who is interim chief of infectious diseases at the SIU School of Medicine in Springfield. I want to go to the phones now. Connie is calling from Champaign. Connie, I understand you qualify for a vaccine, but have had difficulties getting on a list.
Right. And basically, I want to know, is there a list or how do I find it? I keep hearing, and I do qualify by age, and I'm disabled, and I had cancer surgery last summer. So I'm a mega qualifier. But everywhere, and I'm pretty computer literate too, and I've checked a lot of places, and I've been told over the phone that, yeah, you can sign up if you go to this website, but there is no way that I can find this. I'd welcome an Illinois list.
Sure, sure.
I knew where to find it.
Okay, well, thanks for the call, Connie. And Dr. Sundaresan, this is certainly something, I know you're in Springfield, maybe you can't talk specifically about how to sign up in Champaign, but there has been frustration out there. I'm wondering, I mean, is there anything on the horizon in terms of a more unified, accessible approach to getting vaccines?
Absolutely. I think, that is a very, very important point that was brought up. We did not have a list for the county. We spoke about that, but it's going to be very difficult to maintain that. So in Sangamon County, we decided not really to have a wait list. But people could sign up on the website, and there is a hotline that they can call, and there are people to help with the scheduling of the appointments as well. We also have been encouraging people to talk to their primary care providers. There are multiple vaccine clinics. So I think the primary care providers would be able to get them. There are multiple organizations, the hospitals, the local hospitals, which have been giving vaccines as well to eligible patients when they have the vaccine available. The rate limiting step here has always been the vaccine supply. So if they have enough vaccines, I want to mention that every place is making sure that every vaccine doses utilized. There's absolutely zero wastage. So a lot of times, if you're able to let your primary care provider know, I know some of the local hospitals and clinics now here are maintaining a kind of a list where if they have any leftover vaccines, they are able to make calls to people on that list and have them come and get vaccines. But we're not doing that through the county. I also want to mention that there are talks about having some national vaccine navigation systems. It would be something great. I know New York, they've had some efforts on that front, but it would be really nice to have that for us as well here in Illinois.
Lauren, let me ask you about vaccines. Now that President Biden announced every American adult would have a vaccine available to them by the end of May. That doesn't necessarily mean people are going to take it. I've seen reporting, I think it was a New York Times story, about the military, which features largely young, healthy population, pretty high refusal rates there. What has Kaiser Health News been reporting about vaccine trust, medical mistrust, and how widely adopted the COVID-19 vaccine is going to be?
Yeah, I mean, I believe the story you were talking about, it was one third, I think, of the military members so far had refused the vaccine thus far. You know, KFF, the Kaiser Family Foundation, has also been reporting that the group actually most hesitant about the vaccine tend to be more rural GOP voters. So that's certainly something that we'll see becoming a messaging point, I am sure, in the months to come. But certainly hesitancy as something that crosses cultural and other lines, and it will be something that is a barrier to reaching herd immunity. And I want to also add too, President Biden said that we would have enough doses available for Americans by the end of May. Now, logistically getting those all into people's arms by the end of May, that's a bit of a different story too. So we shall see, along with the hesitancy, how that plays out.
Well, that's a great point. And Dr. Sundaresan, I wonder, you mentioned the rate limiting factor so far has been the supply of vaccine. But at some point, we're going to reach a tipping point where there will be more supply than demand. Do you think that government and public health authorities, what are they doing to get ready for that challenge?
The infrastructure, they've been planning all along last few months, and I can speak from what's happening here in Springfield. We have people ready. We have a plan ready, the workflow ready. But as vaccines are available, we're ready to give them almost about 300 to 400 doses per vaccine clinic. I think it's available. We're just waiting for the vaccines to be available. And with the Janssen vaccine now getting the EUA, that is really exciting. So I'm excited to see how that goes.
Lauren, can you talk about the rollout of the vaccine, and particularly what this Janssen or Johnson & Johnson vaccine, as people might have heard it referred to, is going to mean in rural areas, even if there are enough doses? What are the challenges and opportunities there?
Well, the opportunities are fantastic with the J&J vaccine, because as many may know, it's only a one-shot delivery. So for populations that are harder to reach and more rural or more transient communities, it's a fantastic option because you're able to get the shot and then you're done. You don't have to come back for a second appointment. And so I think there's a lot of excitement in the public health sphere around having this other tool, so to speak, in the arsenal to combat the spread of COVID.
And Dr. Sundaresan, can you talk about that Johnson & Johnson vaccine in terms of the effectiveness? I think some people have, maybe they read that vaccine is somewhat less effective than the mRNA vaccine from Pfizer and Moderna, the two-step. Can you clarify for us how effective is it? Should people be thinking, I don't know that I want the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. Maybe I should hold out for one of the other shots.
Absolutely. Before doing that, I want to say one thing. The best vaccine is the vaccine that is available. I'm quoting one of the immunologists here who says the best vaccine is the one that is available. Reported numbers are that for the mRNA vaccines that are available, Pfizer and Moderna, the efficacy is about 93 to 95%. And the reported efficacy for the J&J, Janssen or Janssen vaccine is 72% in the United States. They have studied that in other geographic locations in South Africa. They studied that it's about 66%. And in the Latin American areas was about 61%. So it's still pretty high here in the Americas here, 72%. It is 100% efficacious in preventing deaths. So zero deaths in the vaccine arm for this particular vaccine. And it is 85% or over effective in preventing severe disease.
Okay. I need to ask you to pause there. I want to dig into that severe disease, because I think that that's a phrase that can trip people up sometimes. We do need to take a break here. We will continue our conversation about COVID-19 in Illinois and the Johnson & Johnson vaccine after a short break. This is the 21st. Stay with us.
Support for the 21st comes from Christie Clinic. Christie Clinic, providing health care to the community for more than 90 years. Local procedures, providers, specialties, and choice. Christie Clinic is focused on caring for the community.
This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about COVID-19, the declining case count, and particularly the new vaccine that has gotten emergency use authorization from the federal government, from Johnson and Johnson, or Janssen. We're talking about the effectiveness of that. My guests are Lauren Weber, Midwest correspondent for Kaiser Health News, and Dr. Vithya Sundaresan, who is chief of infectious diseases at the SIU School of Medicine in Springfield. She's also a medical advisor to the Sangamon County Department of Public Health. And Dr. Sundaresan, just before the break, you were talking about the Johnson & Johnson vaccine and preventing severe disease. And I wanted to dig into that. I had heard earlier, I think this was for one of the other vaccines, the mRNA vaccines, that there was a severe case reported, but all that really meant was blood oxygen level of 93. And if they would have stayed at 94, then it wouldn't have been classified as severe. Then that person was not admitted to the hospital. They certainly weren't in the ICU or on a ventilator. Maybe you can talk about what exactly that means, preventing severe disease. Because I think that those of us who are lay people have one idea of, you hear severe disease, that sounds pretty bad. You picture the worst, but maybe that's not exactly what these studies are looking at.
Yeah, typically moderate disease is when you drop your oxygenation below 94%, and you may need admission to the hospital. And severe is when there's respiratory failure, and you may need to be watched in the ICU, need not always be ventilated, but to be watched in the ICU classifies as severe disease. And a lot of times we have a low threshold for watching people in the ICU, especially if they have multiple risk factors and have other medical problems which could potentially worsen the disease in them. So, yes, you're right. Severe disease has different connotations there, but it just typically means that you have a heightened level of monitoring people, and they have a high risk for respiratory failure and need to be monitored closely.
And Dr. Sundaresan, I also want to ask you just about, more broadly, taking a step back at these vaccines. I mean, these are available to people ahead of where most experts said they would be at the start of this pandemic. I wonder, do you think, are we underselling how sort of amazing these vaccines are? I mean, there are still limitations. People are advised, and maybe you can talk about that, what people should do after they get that second dose or the one dose of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine now, you know, and whether people are able to change their behavior, you know, do they still need to wear masks and do physical distancing, that sort of thing? And how do you reconcile, you know, that message with, no, you really should take the vaccine, and it's an important thing to do, even though you are still going to have to take the precautions that we've been taking?
Yeah, vaccines and getting vaccinated is a step towards herd immunity, which is absolutely essential for us to see the light at the end of the tunnel. So that will help us move closer towards that. But till we have a substantial percentage of people in the community vaccinated, we still have to ensure that we go ahead with all the preventative strategies that we have in place, wearing a mask, washing our hands, watching our distance. All those things help. We are learning more about how good these vaccines are and whether or not they are helping us with decreasing transmission. How much are they helping us decrease transmission? They definitely protect us from getting COVID, but how much are we decreasing transmission? We are still capable of transmitting the virus despite vaccination. So all that information is still being explored, and everything so far is looking good with the vaccines. People that are asymptomatic definitely have a lower chance of transmitting the virus, but that's minimized even more when wearing a mask and watching your distance.
Lauren, what about sign up and access for the vaccine? We heard from Connie earlier, who described herself as disabled, but still pretty computer savvy. And she said she was having a lot of trouble. What about people who do have more profound disabilities, people who speak languages other than English as their primary language? Is there accessibility for them, or has that been a challenge, Lauren?
There certainly has been accessibility issues. We published an investigation last week actually examining accessibility for the blind when it comes to signing up for COVID vaccines, and found that in 7 states, residents were unable to access these registration websites because they were not compatible with the technology they use that reads the web aloud to them. And that's a huge problem, as that violates civil rights laws, but it also, you know, keeps someone from being able to get life-saving vaccine.
And I guess I should also mention, Connie, if you know, we are happy to help you. If you're still listening, give us a call back and one of our producers can talk to you off air about trying to set you up with, you know, figuring that out. Let me ask, I think I want to ask this question to both of you in turn, maybe. Lauren, I'll start with you. What do you think is the first holiday we might be able to gather with friends and family this year? You know, and if you want to give separate answers for with a mask and keeping our distance and not hugging and sort of things, and then one where it's actually maybe looks like that gathering might have looked in 2019.
I mean, I'll defer to the public health expert, as I'm the journalist on this one, but I am hopeful it's sooner rather than later.
Dr. Sundaresan, then I'm going to put you on the spot with that.
That is a difficult question. But, you know, I think we're definitely moving towards being able to do that. I don't know what the optimal time is going to be, but it's definitely looking good. So hopefully it's pretty soon. But till then, I think we need to continue to follow our 3 W's and our 1 V, which is vaccination.
And the 3 W's are, maybe you can just remind our listeners of that.
Yes. Wear a mask, watch your distance, and wash your hands.
Okay. 3 W's and then V, get your vaccine when it's available. You know, one last thing I do want to ask you about, Dr. Sundaresan. I think as these vaccines are going to, you know, hopefully we're going to see a sort of explosion in availability here. I think Illinois is anticipating 100,000 doses of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. You might get people who say, well, you know, I'm gonna wait. I'm going to let older people go first, or people who are more immunocompromised go first or something. But as you said, some clinics are calling their patients, maybe who are even are healthier, but, you know, they have an extra dose at the bottom of the vial and it's going to expire and somebody they know can get there. How should people think about that? If you get that opportunity to get the vaccine, do you say, no, I should wait back and let somebody more deserving go? Or do you just jump at the chance because we need to get as many shots in arms as possible?
Absolutely. If you have that opportunity to be able to get the vaccine, it's very important not to waste the dose. So if you get that opportunity, you should take it. And yes, you know, the community has been just so respectful for, you know, in trying to consider others who are in those phases which are currently being vaccinated. Yes, that's great. But if you are called, if you're asked to take the vaccine, it's because we don't want to waste the vaccine. So you should take it if you get a chance to.
Okay. Well, this has been an informative, helpful conversation. I hope listeners have found it that way as well. Dr. Vithya Sundaresan is professor and chief of infectious diseases at the SIU School of Medicine, also medical advisor to the Sangamon County Department of Public Health. We've also been speaking with Lauren Weber, Midwest correspondent for Kaiser Health News. Lauren and Dr. Sundaresan, thank you both so much for being with me today on the 21st.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.